It's so good to see you out tonight, and we're continuing our conversation on the subject of when God builds a family. The first couple of weeks, we tried to define what biblical marriage was, and then the last time we met, week before July 4th, we began to talk about why marriages don't work. And we talked about three different reasons there. One is that a marriage can descend into the proverbial battle of the sexes, where guys look at the girls and say, she really ought to be more like me. And where the girl looks at the guy and says, I wish she was more like me. And instead of complimenting each other, it sort of ends up into this war where the other one's trying to make the other one more like them. And so it gets into a bit of, again, a place of tension. And then we talked about how there is sometimes a lack of commitment. And we talked about how, when you say your vows, it's richer for poorer, sickness and in health, better or worse, till death do us part. But a lot of times those vows, which are fairly unconditional, not entirely unconditional, but fairly unconditional, can slip into more of a what have you done for me lately kind of marriage. And it can get into a place where it's more of a business relationship, although it's not about money, but it's about, if you'll do this, and if you give me what I need, I can give you what you need. So the commitment gets lost. And the relationship falls into something less than a covenant. And then we talked about hardness of heart. And a lot of times married people, and Jesus, by the way, talked about how in Matthew chapter 19, he was asked, why did Moses allow people to divorce? And Jesus says, for the hardness of their hearts. And it seems as though Jesus is identifying the root cause of all divorce, which is somebody let their hearts get hard. And that's easy to do. I mean, it's easy to get irritable with each other and to look at the other person and not see a lot of charm anymore and to sort of be short with them and to be unforgiving. And when your heart gets really hard, only Jesus can help you. If you sense the drift, you can catch it probably at some point and pull yourself back. But a lot of times people just allow themselves to get really hard towards that other person. And when they do, again, Jesus is saying that's really the root cause of divorces. And so we looked at those three. Now let me move on to three more reasons why marriages end up in a lot of trouble. And this comes from my own experiences, my own conversations. I've experienced some of it, but my own conversations, and to be quite frank, my dad did a lot of counseling, and we had a lot of conversations about things that he saw in the course of his lifetime. Another reason marriages can end up, as they would say, in an unholy deadlock, is unreasonable expectations. Sometimes people just aren't reasonable about humanity in general. I mean, that begins a lot of times in dating. And you can see, you ask somebody, what are you looking for in a man? And they describe it to you, and you say, that man don't exist. I don't know who that man is going to be, but I mean, I don't know where you can find that guy, and guys say that about girls. I was reading an article where a guy was really honest. He said, listen, I broke up with my last girlfriend because, and he said there really wasn't anything wrong with it. He said, but we wouldn't have broke up if it hadn't been for social media, to be quite honest with you. But with social media and there's so many people out there, I just had a sense that I could do better. And it's like, And social media is causing some of that. It's, you know, obviously men are getting married. I think the average age now is 29, and the average age women are getting married is 27, and that's been bumping up over the last 30 years. And there's a lot of reasons, you know, people are going to college and they're waiting later, but it's just not college. The expectations and the looking, and I just get a sense in talking to a lot of single people that they're looking for something that's going to be extremely hard to find. The expectations are really high. I mean, if you think about great romances in the Bible, I mean, there's probably not a greater romance in the Bible than Ruth and Boaz. I mean, that's Esther and the king's got some raciness to it, and of course David and his folks, but Ruth and Boaz is like, these two people get it right, and they seemingly have like this perfect marriage. But even when you think about Ruth and Boaz, Ruth was Arab, Boaz was Jew, which means Ruth was about three shades darker than Boaz. I mean, Boaz married a different race, and Boaz was anywhere between, on the low end, 20 years older than Ruth, and some say upwards to 60 years older than Ruth, although I find that hard to believe. But Ruth married a man who was at least as old as her daddy was. Now you just think about what they had to overlook. I mean, this is a mixed race, intergenerational marriage. And again, a lot of times, you know, people say, boy, I want what Ruth and Boaz had. Well, you're not willing to marry somebody that doesn't look like you, and you're certainly not willing to marry somebody 20 years older than you. Okay, so your standards are already so high that that's probably not going to happen for you. Because they had to be willing to overlook quite a lot to bring them together. Now, having said that, you know, generally, you probably shouldn't be looking for somebody 25 years older than you, although that's not bad. Because there are some 50-year-olds that think like 30-year-olds and some 20-year-olds that think like 50-year-olds. So, you know, sometimes it comes together. But in general, as you get older, you face the effects of age. And I'm not so sure somebody who's a lot younger than you can help you. You know, if you're 50 and you're married to a 20-year-old girl, I don't know how much she's going to help you with your struggles over your prostate issues. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot going on with you that she probably can't understand. It would probably be nice to have somebody who could understand the struggles of your particular stage in life. And the wider that gap gets, the harder it could get. But we have to be reasonable. I mean, we have to be reasonable in regards to something as simple as appearance. You have to be reasonable about that. I knew somebody who knew this woman who got up every morning and put her makeup on before he got up because she never wanted him to see her without makeup on. I mean, you got to be reasonable. I mean, you know, my buddy Rick told me, you know, I asked him for some advice because he was married before I was, and I said, well, what should I know? He said, well, just be looking for it, because everybody who gets married, they roll over the first morning and said, good grief, what'd I do to myself? And you just have to be willing to do that. And he gave me some great advice. He said, you got to understand that whoever you marry, and I've told you this multiple times, they're family. And you wouldn't look at your mother and say, good grief, what have I done to myself? I got to get a new mother. Look at her. You don't do that. It's family. And you're committed to your mama, and you ought to be committed to your wife, regardless of what she looks like 24 hours after you're married to her. You got to be serious. A dear brother here was telling me about, let me see if I can say this politely. He was telling about a guy that he knew, I believe he knew, who was dating this girl at college, and she was like a very extremely beautiful girl, and he sort of, I don't think ever got over his crush over her. I mean, she was just like his ideal. He saw her almost in an irrational way, and they got married, and then they check into the hotel room to begin the honeymoon, and he hears her in the bathroom. It's like blew his whole perfect persona and caused him to have this great crisis. It's like he didn't understand that beautiful girls go to the bathroom. It's like, you got to deal with human issues. You got to understand everybody's human. People make poor decisions. That's why 1 Corinthians 13 says love is not irritable. It's not irritable. In the course of life, people make poor decisions. You're not going to believe this, but people sin that you're married to. They do. I'm not saying people sin every day and all that, you know, all of that, that we can't have victory over the devil. But the person you are married to is going to sin. You have to live with that. People have different weaknesses and strengths. Every woman can't cook. I'm sorry if you're a guy and your mama was a great cook. You can't hold your wife to that standard. Even Aunt B was great with apple pies, but she stunk with pickles. All right? Everybody's got their strengths. Everybody's got their weaknesses. Every woman's not a cook. Every guy's not a carpenter. Every woman's not, you know, not gifted in prototypical women ways. Every guy's not gifted in prototypical male ways. You know, my wife has to overlook the fact that, I hate to admit this, but since we're all friends and you love me because you know you can't get to heaven if you don't, I'm afraid of horses. I don't like them. I had a pony when I was young, and it kicked me and knocked me out, and now I think every horse wants to assault me. And I don't trust it. It's big enough to do it. She would like for me to ride horses. We were out in Montana, and I got lucky because apparently, you know, you can ride in the mountains on the horses, and she wanted to do that, but they were booked up for like 6 weeks, so I couldn't do it. That got me out of that. But she would like to have if I was a little more John Wayne-ish. But I don't like horses. I don't like horses. And on top of that, they're expensive. You have to maintain them. But you have to overlook those kinds of things. You have to overlook moods. Everybody's not happy all the time. Now, you know, it's true that if a person is down and they stay down and they don't try to get up, that's a problem. Because, you know, you have to understand people have to live with you. And you want to be as happy and as joyful, and you want the atmosphere of your home to be as free and as loving and as happy as can be. And it's not an act of love to get down and stay down, because people have to live with you. So take the medicine. Pray that the Lord will heal you, but until he heals you, take the medicine. It's an act of love. But having said that, people aren't always high. They aren't always there. And if you can't deal with the human issues of changes in bodies and, you know, the aging process and the fact that people do dumb things and people make mistakes and people do wrong things from time to time and people don't always do wise things and people's moods change and people aren't good at a lot of things that other people aren't, and you know, some people are athletic, some people aren't, if you can't live with that, then don't get married. James Dobson, who's a great Christian psychiatrist and been around for 40 years and very conservative man. But I was surprised that he would say this because, again, he's a very conservative Christian. Let me read this. It'll take about 2.5 minutes. He says, some wives will discover that they are married to a mate who will never be able to fully express himself or understand her needs. His emotional structure makes it impossible for him to comprehend the feelings and frustrations of others, particularly those occurring in the opposite sex. The husband would not read a book such as this and would probably resent it if he was asked to. What then is to be the reaction of his wife? What will you do if your husband lacks the insight to be what you need him to be? My advice is that you change what can be altered, explain what can be understood, teach that which can be learned, revise that which can be improved, resolve that which can be settled, and negotiate that which is open to compromise. Create the best marriage possible from the raw materials brought by two imperfect human beings with two distinct, unique personalities. But for all the rough edges that can never be smoothed and the faults that can never be eradicated, try to develop the best possible perspective and determine in your mind to accept reality exactly as it is. The first principle, and some of you know this, the first principle of mental health is to accept that which cannot be changed. You could easily go to pieces over adverse circumstances that are beyond your control. You can determine, or you can determine to hang tough and not yield to cowardice. Depression is often evidence of emotional surrender. Can you accept the fact that your husband will never be able to meet all of your needs and aspirations? Seldom does one human being satisfy every longing or hope in another. Obviously, this coin has two sides. You can't be his perfect woman either. He is no more equipped to resolve your entire package of emotional needs than you are to become his sexual dream machine every 24 hours. Both partners have to settle for human foibles and faults and irritability and fatigue and occasional nighttime headaches. A good marriage is not one in which perfection reigns. It is a relationship in which a healthy perspective overlooks a multitude of unresolvables. Thank goodness my wife Shirley has adopted this attitude towards me. So one reason, again, another reason that marriages often hit the rocks is an unwillingness or inability to accept human imperfection. Now, another reason, and I guess this is number five, there can also be an inability to be able to negotiate or compromise or problem solve. And that's why if you're single and you're dating, I think one of the three top things that you're looking for if you're thinking about getting married is somebody who is able to negotiate and problem solve. Because that's what life is. It's a set of problems. And if you marry somebody who doesn't know how to negotiate and compromise, you may not be married to that person long. That's why, I don't have any Bible for this, but I have some experience in this. That's why if you are looking at a person who has been spoiled by their parents, and by spoiled I mean they never had to share a bedroom, they got what they wanted pretty soon when they wanted it. They got the car they wanted when they were 16. They have to wait. They didn't have to buy. They didn't have to work for a lot of what they had. In other words, they're a person who never really had to compromise a lot of their desires. I'm not saying don't marry that person, but I'm saying you better be sure they've learned to compromise in life. Now, you could be one of eight kids and still not know how to compromise. I mean, if you're in a family, a large family, you've had to share a room, and you could have adopted a fighting attitude. It's like, I'm going to win. I'm going to get to the top of the heat. I'm going to dominate. I'm going to control everybody. And that's not good either. You wouldn't want to marry a person like that. But you ought to be sure that the person that you marry has adult skills in negotiating and compromising. I mean, because when you get married, you're going to have to compromise on budgets. You're going to have to compromise where the money goes. You have to compromise on vacations. You have to compromise on who you spend your time with. I mean, you think this is funny, but it ain't funny. Your wife's going to have friends that you don't like, and you particularly don't want to have to spend a lot of time with their husbands. And you laugh about that unless you're married. It's like, honey, we're not double dating with these people. I'm not sitting around for 3 hours with this guy. And you two, I'll babysit the kids. You can go shop for a couple hours, but we don't do the double dates with these people. I don't like them. And you got to negotiate who you're going to spend time with. You got to negotiate vacations. You got to negotiate the holidays and where you're going to spend Christmas and where you're going Christmas Eve and where you're going Christmas morning. You're going to have to negotiate child care, which is going to be an issue of who's going to maybe stay home when you have kids and who's going to work. Or if you do child care, is it going to be done by her mother or is it going to be done by your mother? Are you going to do a daycare? You're going to have to negotiate where you go to church. And it's not as simple as saying, well, we'll go here Sunday morning and we'll go there Sunday night. Because if you do it that way, you've basically negotiated yourself into a place where you can't be involved in either church. You really can't be adequately involved where you are really spiritually fulfilled. So life is going to be full of negotiation. And if you run into somebody who's always had it their way, or they don't seem to have the emotional capacity to negotiate, I'd be very concerned about marrying that kind of person. Now, if you've already married them, God bless you. God bless you. And again, you're back to where James Dobson is saying, fix what you can fix. Negotiate what you can negotiate. But if they are incapable of understanding that we're trying to get the middle ground, everything's not entirely fixable. There are unresolvables that you may just have to live with. Now, here's a trick if you're starting out in marriage. Try to negotiate as much as you can early in the marriage, even before. Part of what premarital counseling is a sitting down and trying to negotiate. I mean, in premarital counseling, you're sitting down and you're going through the list of saying, who's going to do the cooking? Who's going to do the cleaning? Who's going to do the car? Who's going to do the lawn? Who's going to do the cars? Who's washing the cars? Who's working? Who's staying home if you have kids? You're going through all of that and trying to settle as much of that and pre-negotiate it before you get to that point. Because you want as few surprises in your marriage as you can get. I'm talking to a fair amount of people, again, who are making this really hard. There are people, and they seem to be, I'm not trying to offend anybody here, but the more education you get, sometimes the dumber you get. It seems like I'm running into a fair amount of really smart people who think that everything is 50-50 in a marriage. And so, they'll say, well, when decisions come up, we need to talk them out. That's the mindset. When decisions come up, we need to talk them out. Ideally, you want to assign responsibilities in marriage so that there's as little talking as possible later. Assign task based on ability. That's complementing each other. That's week two. We're complementing each other. So that you don't end up in endless negotiation. I mean, listen, you don't want endless negotiation about where are we eating today. Well, I don't know. Well, my opinion is as good as you. You're never going to get to the restaurant. You don't want endless negotiations about buying cars and now. In our marriage, child care has been ceded to my wife. She's a lot better at it than I am. She's really good at it. If my kids ask me if they can do something, it's like, you're going to have to ask your mother. If they say, well, she said ask you, then I know I can render an opinion. But It all goes through her. It's delegated. That was delegated before the first one was born, that she would set the schedules. She would determine, what was best on a daily basis. She would have a far more say in the education, and I would be in an advisory capacity. Now, financially, that got delegated to me because I'm the accountant in the family. And I give her, financial reports. And she comes to me and she says, this is what the kids need. And I say, how much money do you need? And she says, I think that's what we can do. And I approve the check. So we're going to do some significant remodeling on our house. And I can tell you, I'm going to give her a budget because the money's, I'm going to tell her what we can spend. And as long as what she does doesn't devalue the house, she's probably going to get her way on 99% of stuff because she has to live there a lot more than me. I mean, I go to work. I mean, she's there all the time. In all fairness, she ought to get what she wants with the house. It just means more to her. It needs to be more functional for her and the kids. And I got my office, as long as my TV is where I need it at home, as long as you don't move it to the porch, she's going to get what she wants. That's been delegated to her. So I don't expect to have 10 conversations about paint. We're not negotiating. She has what she wants. We're not going to negotiate the flooring. We're not going to negotiate the ceiling. We are going to have a conversation, and I've already told her this is what I think we can spend, and she says, I think I can work with that. Hopefully, we can get this done without a lot of communication, because the negotiations have already been done. To the best of your ability, do that. Guys, you don't want to do a repair job where everything gets negotiated. Don't want to do that. Smart people assign, they delegate, they rule this, they rule that, and they don't have endless verbiage where on every opinion you get your say and I get mine. Because again, who wants to live like that? You do? I wouldn't want to live like that. It's more to life than arguing. So again, you're with a person that doesn't know how to compromise. You're in a situation where there's an unwillingness to compromise. And to be quite frank, I think that there can be a lot of people who just don't know how to negotiate. Just don't know how to negotiate. If that's you, start watching Jordan Peterson YouTube videos. It can help you. Learn how to negotiate a fair deal. Donald Trump wrote a book, The Art of the Deal. Go read Donald Trump's book. Although, it's no. Go find some way to figure out how to negotiate. Because you're going to need to. Third, let me recapitulate. First of all, we're talking about, I forget what we said 20 minutes ago. I know we talked about negotiation. Third, if you're going to have a solid marriage, you need a common, encompassing, big goal that you can get on board with. I think a lot of times people get into a marriage and they've been married for a while and they can't think of a good reason to stay together. I mean, you see these Hollywood marriages and he's making movies 6 months over there and she's making movies and they're both making gobs of money. And I think, they always divorce on irreconcilable differences. I think that's just a catch-all to say we couldn't figure out a good reason to stay married. You've got to have big, lofty goals together. I mean, people have been making fun of Bill and Hillary Clinton for 30 years. Remember the old SNL skits in the 90s where Bill was always trying to wish that she was dead or that she would die? It's like, you look at them and it's like, on one level, they seem like the most dysfunctional couple ever. But they've stayed together through a lot. And it seems like one of the reasons they stay together is that they have lofty goals. They're ambitious. And both have wanted to be president, and it's in their best interest to stay together to accomplish their goals. It's an interesting place where Franklin Roosevelt and Eleanor, they stayed together, Franklin and Eleanor. He had an affair on her early in life with a woman named Lucy Mercer. And I think he probably loved Lucy Mercer. And she found out about it and said, you can either have Lucy Mercer or you can be president. But if I divorce you, you'll never be president. So I'll stay with you if you get rid of her. So do you want Lucy or do you want to be president? She didn't say, do you want Lucy or me? And he got rid of Lucy Mercer. And she stayed with him, although she punished him for that. Well, it's sort of interesting because he was down in Georgia at the hot springs, and word came to her that that he had died. He was down there vacationing, and Eleanor went down to collect the body and bring it back to Washington. When she walked in the room, there stood Lucy Mercer. He never got rid of Lucy Mercer. He told her he did. And he just got smarter about hiding the affair. And she was so angry at him, although he's dead. The only thing that softened her heart so that she could get through the funeral as a grieving wife was that when she rode the train with him back to Washington, thousands upon tens of thousands lined up to get a glimpse of the train carrying his body going by. And she realized how much America loved him. And it softened her heart. And that's an interesting story. But I'm saying, again, those two, they didn't have a lot in common. But they had this common big goal that kept them together. Now, I'm not saying you need to run for president or be senator or whatever. But if you can get together and say, what does this marriage mean? And what is it that we can do together that we can't do alone? That really does provide a lot of security for that marriage. I mean, I love my wife deeply, but I'm not oblivious to the fact that I'm in the same boat that Franklin was. I mean, if she said, I want out of this, I don't want you, my ministry would be over. Our relationship and our great goal is to be leaders in the kingdom of God. We have to do that together. And it drives us together. When you sit down and say, what keeps you two together? The list is really long, and it includes, like, if we weren't together, all my education would be useless. Financially, we would blow up. I mean, it's not just well, you know, we love the kids. It's a lot deeper than that. The wall is a lot stronger. We've got to stay together to accomplish the goal that we believe God has for us. That's important. Someone told me a while back, and again, I think that's the best reason to stay together. I think if a couple finds a ministry that they say, you know what, we believe God has this ministry for us, and to be quite frank, we can't accomplish it unless we stay together and have a good marriage. We won't be able to move forward. We can't be what God wants us to be. We believe that He's put us together. He's brought us together. He's brought us together for a reason. And the reason God brings anybody together is for the advancement of His kingdom. And we accept that. And so what is that? I think that is a huge reinforcement to any marriage that would prevent you from getting to the place where you look at each other. I mean, how many people do you know? They get married. They stay married 25, 30 years. All the kids are out of the house and they look at each other and say, why are we together? I mean, it made sense as long as we were raising the kids. We needed each other to help raise the kids. I mean, we didn't want single parenthood and we wanted stability for the kids. But once the kids are out of the house, they look at each other and say, What reason do we have to be together? You know, if your life is built upon a grand plan that's bigger than both of you, you don't reach that point. Never reach that point. And you need to do that. I'm going to finish there. There's one more, but I'm going to finish. That's enough. When I can't remember my first point, it's enough. It's enough. God wants us to have stable marriages. And maybe I should end there. And I'm talking to parents now. By far, the most important job and the most important goal in our lives is to get our kids to heaven. Nothing comes close to that. Nothing comes close to that. And if you're married today, it's important, if for no other reason, to work on your problems, to compromise, to do what you can. Because if you will, you greatly increase the chances that your kids will serve God and go to heaven. There's nothing worse in a kid's life than divorce. If you think about the threats you have, you say, well, as an adult, what are the threats to your happiness? You would say, well, I mean, if I lost my job, if there were financial things that happened, that would be a problem. I mean, if for some reason I lost my house, that would be a problem. You know, if I wasn't able to have this group of friends, you know, I can see how that would be an issue. If I wasn't able to, if my family broke up, that would be an issue. I mean, we identify financial things and family things and relational things and issues related to security and those things. Your kids, all of that, is all of those things for your kid is tied up in you staying together. Because if you get a divorce that has financial financial implications for your kid, that means your kid's family is broken up. It means that maybe the friends they hang out with, they may not be able to go to the same school if they're moving back and forth. That means that they can't be with who they want to on the holidays. All of their security is primarily based in you staying together. And that's why kids that go through a divorce end up having a lot of scars in spite of all the attempts of parents to try to compensate. I'm not trying to make you guilty if you've had a divorce. I'm not trying to do that. But, you know, as I said the first week, I we've all got our stuff. We've all got decisions we wish that we could go back and revisit. I mean, and a lot of that's relational. But take your marriage seriously. Take it seriously. It matters to God. It matters to your family. And if you have to live in a marriage for a while and it's not as happy as you want, stick it out. You know, there was a statistic. They did a major study up north. They took couples that, and they had them describe whether their marriage was happy or unhappy. And so then they narrowed it down to all of these couples, and these are hundreds of couples that said, we have an unhappy marriage. And then they followed them. Of the unhappy marriages that stayed together, they said, we're unhappy, but we're going to work on it. We're going to stay in there. 5 years later, two-thirds of those marriages rated themselves as happy. And the point is that if you have an unhappy marriage, if you'll stay in there and work on it, you have a 66% chance that in 5 years you will have a happy marriage. But you got to stay in there. You got to stick it out. And there are reasons beyond your own happiness to stick it out. There's your family. And again, if you're a Christian, there's kingdom of God issues at stake here. I feel like I'm ending on a low moment. You can do it. God can help you. Listen, let me say this. God is for everything He invented. He created marriage. And if there's anything you can count on, it's that God will support that which He created, if you ask Him. Let me live there. That's a good place to be. God will help you.